Welcome to the 367th episode of Travel Itch Radio, the show that lets you scratch your lust for travel from the friendly confines of your home. I'm your host, Dan Schlossberg, along with my terrific co-host, Keita Roberts, also known as Girl Carnivore, because of her creative and colorful culinary expertise. Keita?
We know that you can't travel right now, but things are going to change, hopefully sooner rather than later. In the meantime, we're continuing this weekly show so that your half hour of armchair travel will take you back to the good old days and help you understand that they will come back soon.
And tonight, our guest, we have great pleasure, actually, in this particular guest, Catherine Hamm, the distinguished travel editor of the Los Angeles Times. Welcome to Travel Itch Radio, Catherine. We're happy to have you.
Thank you, and I'm happy to be there and here.
So ever since travel came to a grinding halt 2 months ago when I conveniently got stuck in Los Angeles, how has travel section of LA Times changed?
Oh, well, let me count the ways. The section had been a standalone section since the 60s, but in late February, it didn't have anything to do with coronavirus. We combined with the Saturday section, kind of the leisure section of the week. Then when it became clear that the pandemic was going to unravel travel, we turned most of our pages over to those stories that help people navigate through this weird time, mostly at home. So some of what we do, in fact, most of what we are doing now is in travel, is not destination coverage, which is what we used to do, but consumer coverage, because so many travel providers were just unprepared for a change of this magnitude, and consumers, unfortunately, are paying the price.
Well, as a subscriber to the LA Times Online, I found and enjoy your Escapes column, a personal blog that I really enjoy. When and why did you start it, and where do you get your ideas?
Well, first of all, thanks for being a subscriber. We could use about a million more just like you. And I have to say that Escapes is kind of a self-inflicted wound. About 4 years ago, the Times was producing a kind of a robo-travel newsletter that was automatically curated, and it was more marketing than reader service. So I asked whether I could take it and make it into a consumer-facing column, as though I were writing a letter to people who share our passion for travel. And it has changed a little bit over the years, but it's finally found a footing, I think, and a voice, although the voice is sometimes shrill because it's mine. But it is a labor of love. I pull the stories from our travel section and our online section, which is pretty robust, and sometimes business. And I try to end always on a personal note each week, just to let people know that this is real life stuff. Since coronavirus, I've been trying to encourage people to stay strong, that what's made them successful as travelers is the same quality that makes them able to see themselves through this time, get through this time, and just gut it out.
I love that it ends on that personal note. So blogs and podcasts like this one are a relatively recent innovation and have been growing in popularity. Have they been able to influence your work at all?
They've definitely influenced it. You know, one of the things I think I've learned from listening to podcasts and reading other blogs is the more successful ones really connect with you on a kind of a more intimate level. You know, even though you're writing out there in the great digital landscape, I think people want to feel that sense of intimacy. They want to know that there's somebody out there they can connect with. Journalism, usually by its nature, is kind of arm's length, and I really do respect that. But I think in travel, when we're telling people how to spend their most precious resources with travel, that's usually time and money, we need to make whatever we write open and accessible and human and put a face on that printed word. And that openness, that accessibility is really what I've learned about from other blogs and podcasts.
Well, obviously, Catherine, the current pandemic has caused major changes in travel, especially air travel, hotels, concert planning, conventions. Do you ever think we'll get back to the way things were when 2020 started?
Nope. No. You know, and it's tempting to say, next question, please. But really, I think that that is not necessarily a bad thing. I think we, as a traveling people, a traveling nation, a traveling world, I think it had all become a little bit overheated. I think one of the unintended consequences of this is that over-tourism had become so rampant and has plagued places in the world, all over the world, and that has ground to a halt. I was interviewing a fellow named Bill Heineke, who is the chairman of Minor Corporation, which has about more than 500 hotels around the world, and he was sheltering in place in Phuket, Thailand, which is one of his properties. And I was really struck when I was talking to him. He said, you should see the water right now. You know, Phuket's a very, very touristy place. And he said, it's really clear, and I can see how the coral is recovering. And I'm not seeing trash on the beach, and I'm seeing hornbill birds again. And I thought to myself, how wonderful would it be if we could stop loving things to death, stop fighting nature, and go back to being its servant. So I'm hoping this slows the crushing power of over-tourism. I long for the days when we're not having people who are making coffee on a bridge in Venice or who aren't sneaking into sacred sites and trying to have the view all for themselves, or even just throngs of crowds that inadvertently trample places and make them less attractive and less able to endure.
For the most part, airlines have grounded their fleets and ordered passengers who still fly to wear masks. The industry recovered from 9/11, but took a while. Do you think there'll be a long recovery process again?
I do think there'll be a long recovery process. When you stop and think about 9/11, the airlines were grounded for about 5 days, and it took several years for them to recover. I think this will take much, much longer, and I think it will come with a fundamental change, and it's this. After 9/11, we began to think of travel as a right. You know, the growth of low-cost carriers has meant that many more people can access the world and the joy that comes with that. And although that's not a bad thing, I think now, after such a long time without traveling, I think we'll return to the mindset that travel is a privilege and it comes with responsibilities to the people and places we visit. And I think that will be a key factor in addressing some of these over-tourism concerns.
That's a beautiful sentence. Travel is a privilege. I love that. Now, as a travel editor, I'm sure that you love to travel just like us. I also read that you want to live to be a cranky old lady. So what will it take for you to feel safe enough when we can travel again?
A quart of vodka, maybe. I'm not sure.
How is that feeling?
And unfortunately, I think I've already lived to be a cranky old lady. So, you know, I've set the bar pretty low for myself in terms of returning to travel. Actually, if you told me I could get on a plane tomorrow and go someplace, I'd on any one of my wish list destinations, I'd probably do it. I think air travel has always been an issue in terms of safety, not because of crashes, because it's much, much safer than it's ever been, but just in terms of its germiness and its infections, and this is certainly no exception. Road trips, yeah, I think I'd feel pretty good about doing a road trip right now. Trains, absolutely. Amtrak is doing social distancing. Cruises I might hold off on for a while, partly because so many of them are not sailing at the moment. But, yeah, travel is such a siren song for me. I don't know how long I can resist its lure. I'm not going to do anything. We are, of course, in Los Angeles. Non-essential travel is verboten right now.
I totally understand. Tonight we're talking with the LA Times travel editor, Catherine Hamm.
Catherine, is the LA Times travel section California-centric, or do you try to include a regional, national, and international book also? How do you do it?
Right now we are going to be very California-centric and California in the West-centric, because we know that when travel does come back, it will come back with closer-to-home destinations. And we also know that our readership is crazy about California in the West. There is so much to see and so much to do, so many beautiful parks, so much land out there that I think that people continue to be fascinated with it. I think, though, that our readers also, have a worldview, and they're world travelers as well. So we will try to sneak in a little bit of international travel, but it's going to be a while before international travel comes back. So I think we're going to be a lot of domestic, a lot of California in the West, and for our readers, that's not a bad thing.
Do you have a staff or a regular stable of freelance contributors?
There are four of us on staff. Three of us are editors, and there's one writer, Christopher Reynolds. But we also have a group of freelancers who contribute regularly. They all have their areas of expertise, and you know, it's difficult to cover the world with four people. So having freelancers helps us extend our reach.
Now, between Dan and I think I'm the one with the taste. Well, at least he likes the ballpark food, and I really love the gourmet food, and I like to find that when I travel. Do you feature culinary angles in those articles that you run?
Yeah, we love to do that. I love to assign that coverage. I don't really know anything about food except that I eat it, but we've had some really accomplished writers who have shared their food journeys, and I think that's one of the most interesting ways to learn about a culture is through its food. It tells great stories, and I think we tell some great stories that go along with that. I think it does take a certain expertise to do it. You can't just have anybody doing it. So we've had some of the best, I think, really have enjoyed broadening our coverage to include a focus on that.
I want to stick in a question here for Kita. Kita, this is Hamburger Month. Would you explain what that is?
Burger Month. Yeah, so May is hashtag National Burger Month, and I own burgermonth.com. Sadly, since I've been in LA, I haven't had a chance to go out and explore burgers. I'm really, really sad, but I'll get there someday. But yeah, so the entire month we invite the world to participate in Burger Month using that hashtag. I reshare all the content, and there's prizes on the burgermonth.com site. But someday I'll get out and I'll get to explore all the burgers in LA.
Sounds great. Catherine, do you get ideas from other newspaper travel sections, not to mention in-flight publications and magazines like Travel and Leisure?
Well, sadly, there are very few newspaper travel sections left. But if there's anything, if it says travel, I'm going to look at it. Travel and Leisure, of course, in-flight publications, absolutely. Very different markets from ours, but a good idea is a good idea. I also get a lot of inspiration from reading widely, especially nonfiction. One of my favorite stories came as a result of reading a book by Timothy Egan, who is a terrific nonfiction writer. And his book, The Immortal Irishman, about an Irish revolutionary named Thomas Marr, sparked an idea in covering the most Irish city in America. And thanks to Marr, we figured out that it was Butte, Montana. And so we did that story. It was really fun because it's one of those things that's a surprise. And that's what you want travel to be. You want it to be surprising. You want it to delight and surprise. And that certainly did. I mean, when we think of Irish cities in America, we think of Boston. We don't always think of Montana. But a lot of Irish settled in Montana, and that's why it's very has roots back in the old country.
We're talking tonight with LA Times travel editor Catherine Hamm. Kita?
Okay, Catherine. So this is one of my favorite questions when people ask me personally as a traveler and as a travel lover. You must have your favorites. So what is one of your signature favorite places, both foreign and domestic, one that you'd absolutely want to go back to?
Oh, gosh, I hate being asked this question. It's like saying, which are your favorite children? You know, and,
right.
And I love them all, but I have to say that I love Hawaii. I lived there as a child. I got married in Hawaii. I would go back whenever I can because for us it's a weekend trip, really. My other great love domestically is Kansas, which is – I said that at a travel show one time. They said, where do you like to go? And I said, Kansas. And the audience laughed, but I'm actually serious. I went to college there. I lived there for several years. I think that the sight of – wheat waving in the wind, that green wheat as it's coming up in the spring, is just absolutely glorious. And it's, to me, it sort of exemplifies America. In terms of international places, I love Spain, absolutely love Spain. Want to go back there. And I love Latin America. There's still a couple of noteworthy places that I haven't been, particularly in South America, but, you know, they're on my list. They're on my radar.
How about favorite hotels, inns, or places to stay? Do you like returning to places you know, or do you like to try new ones?
Well, when I'm traveling for leisure, I might go to a place that I've been before. But when I'm traveling for business, when I'm trying to serve readers, we stay, you know, we don't just plop ourselves down in one hotel. We generally move every night or every other night so that we can have the experience and see if it's a good place that we can recommend. So I have very, very few favorites. In fact, I think I have no favorites simply because I haven't really stayed in one long enough to deem it a favorite that I want to go back to, because I'm always on the move. We're always on the move when we're traveling for journalism.
Well, I'm almost afraid to ask this next question, but I have to ask you about airlines, since we all have our airline horror stories. How about your favorite and least favorite?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Right now, my least favorite airline is any airline that doesn't have a customer-centric approach to business. And that means being upfront with people about what they can and cannot expect legally, what they're legally obligated to do, explaining what they're legally obligated to do as schedules collapse and flights continue to be canceled. So I've been really annoyed with a number of airlines that have been not duplicitous, but they haven't exactly been forthcoming. If you're entitled to a refund if the airline cancels your flight and it can't accommodate you within a reasonable period of time. But sometimes they forget to tell you that. They say, here, take this voucher. And that's not what the law says. There are a lot of people who need that money right now because there are a lot of people who are out of work. So they are not my favorite. As for my favorite, over the last few years, we have seen Delta grow into a really outstanding airline, and if I had to choose one, I would choose them right now.
I have been absolutely, I hate to play favorites too, but I have really enjoyed Delta the last few years, so I feel you there. Now, I'm going to ask a tough one. All of us who've been travel journalists for some time have an embarrassing moment. Are there any that you would be willing to share?
How many hours do you have? I mean, you look up the word embarrassment, you're going to find
you sound like
my kind
of person.
My embarrassment as a travel writer in my younger years really had to do mostly with assuming that I knew what I was doing. And life pretty much taught me that I didn't know what I was doing, and it was very humbling. So these days, now that I'm a little bit older, like quite a bit older, it's mostly doing more than I should or more than I'm actually capable of. Like last fall, somebody said, it was at a conference, and they said, would you ride this Harley onto the stage for us because we want to blah, blah, blah. And I said, sure. And they said, are you comfortable doing that? I said, yeah, let me just warm up the bike and make sure that it's fine. Well, I'm not a Harley rider because Harleys are big, and I am a short, short person. So I got on the bike, and I thought, oh, this is really heavy, and it's much bigger than my bike. I'm not sure I can do this. And just I told my riding partner, I said, I'm not sure I can do this, and went down. And fortunately wasn't hurt badly, but my pride was horribly wounded, and I came home from that trip with a black eye and all sorts of scrapes and bruises, and people said, wow, you must have had a really great time on that trip. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, can hardly walk, yeah. Don't have my glasses, ruined my glasses, but yeah, it taught me a good lesson about making sure that you don't stretch too much. I mean, we want to stretch when you're a traveler. You just don't want to stretch beyond what your limits are.
Well, I can relate because I was once asked to throw out the first ball at a spring training game at the Disney ballpark when there was a Disney ballpark with the Braves, and I made a really bad pitch in front of about 10,000 people who booed. That was not so good either.
Ooh, that hurts.
Well, that's why the Braves didn't sign me. But anyway, you're listening to Travel Itch Radio with Dan Schlossberg and Keita Roberts. Listen live on iTunes or blogtalkradio.com or check out the archive show on Facebook. Keita?
Tonight we have the pleasure of speaking with the LA Times travel editor, Catherine Hamm.
Your travel section in the Los Angeles Times has won numerous awards. Would you mention some that were especially pleasing to you, Catherine?
I have been so lucky to work with a staff that is creative and talented, and we have strengths beyond what we probably should. Sometimes I think they're superhuman. I think they are superhuman. We usually do a big road trips issue, and they absolutely excel at that, because road trips, you know, we think a lot about airline travel when we're talking about travel, but really about 3/4 of all trips are road trips, and I think that's sometimes something we forget. So road trips are really important. They're really important to Westerners, too, because there's so much ground to cover. So our road trips issue has been, I think, some of the best that we have done. We've done amazing consumer-facing sections. When I say that, I mean, for example, right before Thanksgiving, which, of course, is a huge travel time, we will try to aggregate everything you need to know about this airport, that airport, what airline is here, what airline is there, how to make people who are maybe infrequent travelers more comfortable getting through the process, because the process is not always the same. And so that's not glamorous work, it's not sexy work, but it's important work, because I think it helps people feel more comfortable and safer as they're taking a journey. So we've been proud of that work as well. We've done terrific work. We have a writer, Rosemary McClure, who knows Hawaii very well, and she has twice done a series called 20 for 20. So it's 20 meals for less than $20 on four major islands, which means she's eating at 20 or 25 restaurants, sometimes 30, and then coming back and writing that, and just tremendous, tremendous work. So,
sign me up.
So, yeah, that is difficult work, but it's terrific work. So, there's a lot that we've done that's been fun. We've done a lot with Asia, because of course Asia is closer in many cases than Europe. For our West Coast listeners or West Coast readers, and it is popular. And before the pandemic, there were incredibly inexpensive airfares. So it has grown in popularity with our readers, and we're trying to turn more attention to those destinations, which are not quite as well known as some of the European destinations.
Catherine, do you belong to any associations like Society of American Travel Writers or North American Travel Journalists Association? And if you do, how they helped you?
I belong to the Society of American Travel Writers and have off and on for more than 30 years. SATW, and I am actually a former president, I'm a past president of SATW, has been like a home away from home. It's one of those things where you can walk into this group of people, and travel is such an unusual thing as a journalistic pursuit. There aren't that many people who do it, and so sometimes everybody thinks you're lying on the beach and drinking margaritas, and that's not true. It is the hardest work I've ever done, and people are always saying, oh yeah, poor you. Well, it is hard work, and I love it. I wouldn't be doing it if I didn't. But with SATW, you can walk into a room and say, oh my God, I have the worst experience in fill in the blank. And you can tell them what happened. They absolutely will understand. They will sympathize, and they'll say, well, next time you might have done X, Y, Z, or next time you will know better, and you'll know how to get yourself out of that. And so besides just the travel nuts and bolts, these people are also writers, and they're photographers, and I learn so much from them. I am not visually a particularly astute person, but with the photographers that we have in our organization, we have a lot of professional development around both writing and photography, and it's tremendous. It has been a tremendous help. I just can't say enough good things about SATW.
So SATW and NAJDA and Powwow and other industry groups bring travel journalists and publicists together and provide information or familiarization or fam trips. Do you prefer to travel solo or in a group?
We generally do solo travel. The Los Angeles Times has a very strict policy, and that is we need to travel the way a regular traveler travels. And so that means that we don't announce ourselves. We always travel anonymously. We always pay full freight when we go. And so we are traveling anonymously so that we can have the same experience that any other traveler has. We want to make sure that we're not getting special treatment because of who we are. Because people don't read bylines, they very rarely catch on to who we are unless we make some fatal mistake, which we generally don't. So if somebody asks us if we're a travel writer, we don't lie about it, but we don't necessarily disclose it. We do try to be very upfront if we're quoting somebody and say, look, I am a travel writer, and I'm wondering if I could use this with your permission. Or we will call back afterwards and talk to the person and say, I'm writing this for the Los Angeles Times. But we try to be very, very upfront. It's a really interesting line to walk, but we try to walk it as well as we possibly can.
And Catherine, I know that you, like I, love baseball. So do you try to see a game or two when you're on the road? Of course, when there is a game.
I do. I think the last time I got to do that, I was in Cleveland, and that was a blast. I've been to ballparks in Seattle, Oakland, of course, San Francisco, San Diego, Kansas City, St. Louis, Washington, D.C. As I think I may have told you, Dan, I grew up being a Washington Senators fan. And if you are a Washington Senators fan, or you were, you have to really love baseball because they were just awful. They were just terrible. They were unbelievably bad. And that's kind of where I got
first
my love
war,
of baseball.
First in war, first in peace, and last in the American League.
Right. Not last year, though, unfortunately, for us, for Dodgers fans. So, I do try to get out and see games. I love Camden Yards. I haven't yet been to the new stadium in Washington. When I went to see the Nationals, when they returned to Washington, it was still at the old RFK, so I have yet to be at the new stadium, and that's something that's on my bucket list.
Speaking of being on the road, Catherine, is it still difficult, do you think, in the 21st century for a woman to travel alone, especially a woman from the United States who happens to be traveling solo overseas?
You know, that's an interesting question to ask, and I think the answer is yes, to a certain extent, but maybe not so much for the reasons that we think. I think part of it is that, and I've learned this from some of my fellow SATW members, and that is you have to carry yourself with confidence as a woman. You cannot let your guard down. You have to be very, very aware. And learning to do that, being afraid maybe, being in a place where perhaps you shouldn't be at that hour of the night, but trying to look confident and trying to look have that don't mess with me look on your face is, I think, makes all the difference in the world. I think that makes the difference between something that could be disastrous and something that keeps you safe. I also think we have more information available to us now as women. One of my colleagues, one of my favorite travel colleagues, is a former detective for the Los Angeles Police Department who is now a world speaker on world safety. And he says, you know, do you call the hotel before you get there and let them know that you're coming? Do you do that? I said, well, no. And he said, well, if you're getting there late, don't you want them to expect you? And if you don't turn up by a certain time, isn't it important that they know that? And he said, do you call the police department? I said, why would I call the police department? He said, just call them and ask. He said, you never know who you're going to get. You might get somebody who's answering the phone and says, yeah, that hotel is in a great neighborhood, but call and ask, because you want to be sure that you're taking every step you can to make sure, first of all, that you're safe, and second of all, that you feel confident where you are. And I think that makes all the difference in the world.
Well, unfortunately, Catherine, we're out of time, so I want to say that our guest tonight has been Catherine Hamm, travel editor of the Los Angeles Times. Thank you, Catherine, for joining us on Travel Itch Radio.
Thank you both. I appreciate it.
And that is it for this edition of Travel Itch Radio. Next week, we'll talk to author and angler Aaron Reed about fly fishing in Austin, Texas. Now, this is Dan Schlossberg, along with my beautiful and talented co-host, Keita Roberts, a.k.a. Girl Carnivore, saying thank you for your time this time. Until next time, good night and stay safe.